I, quantum gravity is non-renormalizable, and therefore this poses a problem, and therefore there have been many trials to new approaches to find a solution to this problem. It's a little bit embarrassing of talking about this here, because the initiator of many of these approaches are sitting actually in the audience. Anyway, so M-theory is one of the approaches. However, the problem with M-theory is that it is actually not yet defined at non-perturbative level. So nobody actually knows exactly what M-theory is non-perturbatively. The string theory approach, it is extremely promising in unifying gravitons with gauge bosons. However, the price to pay is lots of high energy fields, which are as yet non-observed. Yes, the microphone is on.
But I know. Okay.
So loop quantum gravity. Loop quantum gravity with all is various formulation, including spin forms, which we heard yesterday, is a Hamiltonian approach based on holonomies as fundamental variables. There are lots of very nice new predictions at microscopic scales. However, as we heard also yesterday, there are some difficulties in generating the bridge to the correct semiclassical limit, that is general relativity. Causal dynamical triangulations and asymptotic safety, a very promising approach. It is actually the only one that predicts successfully a semi-classical de Sitter universe. It is an approach in which time has to be postulated as different from space from the very beginning, otherwise it doesn't work. The only drawback from my perspective is that there is no prediction on the number of dimension of the universe. The number of dimension is an input. You have to formulate the theory in a certain number of dimensions. Energetic causal set is a theory presented by Cortez and Lee a couple of years ago. It's another setting in which time is fundamentally different from space at the microscopic level already. So today, I'd like to present a new idea. Of course, it's not a complete program. It's just the kernel of a new idea. And I would like to present the results that I've had till now with this model. It will be partially analytical result and partially a numerical result. So the new idea refers to asymptotic safety. Asymptotic safety is an idea in which you start from the known infrared fixed point corresponding to general relativity, to the correct gravity theory, and you try to identify a non-trivial ultraviolet fixed point that defines quantum gravity non-perturbatively. Now here, I'd like to propose to do the opposite. I'd like to start from an ultraviolet degrees of freedom and try to recover the correct infrared limit from a very simple model. So the idea is that the geometric variables are totally wrong to describe quantum gravity, and that the fundamental variables are purely combinatoric. So just information bits. Geometry should be emergent, completely emergent at an infrared fixed point. So I'm going essentially the other way around. Instead of starting from an infrared point and trying to come down to an ultraviolet, I'm going the other way around. So the most simple degrees of freedom are bits. So I have n bits here, Si taking value plus minus one, and I have to be quite radical here. So these bits denote presence or absence of space-time, or if you want, presence of space-time or presence of anti-space-time, as you want to call it. Then I have bits Vi, Wij taking the values 1 and 0 that determine the presence or absence of links between the spin Si. So two types of spins, n spins Si and n times n minus 1 half bits Wij. So this is essentially the simplest type of degree of freedom, combinatoric degree of freedom I can take. So let's continue with this principle and take the most simple Hamiltonian for this degree of freedom. So in physics, we have learned that there is nothing simpler than the Ising model. So let's take the Ising model. So here is the Ising model for the spacetime points. So the usual Ising models for spacetime points with a coupling connection Vij. Now, of course, the connections Vij, the couplings Vij between spacetime points are dynamical. So I have to add Hamiltonian also for the for these couplings. And what I will do is I take another Ising model for the edges, for the links. See, these share a vertex. So it is actually a nearest, in this sense, it is a nearest neighbors Ising model for edges, because they share one vertex. The difference is that this is ferromagnetic, minus sign. This is anti-ferromagnetic, a plus sign. And J is the unique coupling constant of the model. I have rescaled the coupling constant that is here to one, just to measure energies in units of what was here. So you see here, this guy here wants to create lots of links, because when you have lots of links, the energy goes down. This guy here, the anti-ferromagnetic Ising model for edges, on the contrary, he wants to avoid links, because the more links you have, the higher the energy. This situation in statistical mechanics is known as frustration. And frustration is at the origin of the majority of very, very interesting behavior in quantum antiferromagnets and various statistical mechanics models. Unfortunately, it is also, it leads to very complex behavior, like in spin glasses. There is no lattice. It's purely combinatoric.
So the
edge between different points are dynamical variables.
But the support of
So one possibility, how I understand this formula is okay. You say there, you fix some lattice points, so it's all possible points.
There is no lattice.
Okay.
So this is the point. This is the main point.
He starts with the mother of all graphs, and he switches it on and off.
Yes.
Yeah. No. That's
if you
right.
Want,
but the mother of all graphs is this fixed lattice.
The complete graph.
Yeah. It's a complete graph, if you want. You can think of a complete graph.
So that's what I wanted to know.
Yes.
So that's because otherwise the indices are...
The complete graph, because here I have all the possible
so
ones.
So that answers my second question, that the sums are over all possible indices.
The sum in the partition function is over all possible configurations of SIs and all possible configurations of links.
So nearest neighbors is in this complete graph, then all vertices are... of this complete graph are nearest neighbors.
No, because you see, when this is zero, then it means that these two particular ones are not connected.
Yeah.
So the configuration, one of the configuration you're summing up over, if you want a subgraph of the complete graphs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you start with, as you said, complete graphs, and then you sum over all subgraphs, which gives you the various configurations.
But I guess you could also say that the Wij defines the connectivity of a graph.
This is my point of view,
yeah,
okay? It defines just the connectivity of a graph. So.
Yeah.
And you fix the number of possible vertices, kind of maximum.
N is fixed. I will let it vary afterwards, but N is fixed.
Yeah.
Another question. I mean, you call these space-time points, but then you're talking about Hamiltonian. Hamiltonian seems to imply an external time for the evolution.
No, for the moment.
No,
for the moment, I will do only thermodynamics with the Hamiltonian. So I will
you
not have a time evolution.
It's a statistical Hamiltonian, which is an action.
Yeah. So you want your time evolution.
I don't want to have a time evolution. I just use it to define a partition function. So this is actually a slight generalization of a model which is well known, a model which was invented by Kazakov in '87, which is called the planar random easing model. So Kazakov studied this model, this partition function here, which is essentially the second easing model. Okay? The only thing, he took the Wij to be planar graphs, which means that in the graphs that he was considering, the coordination number is always 4. So this is planar easing model. And this Wij is drawn randomly without any, they are drawn randomly from a uniform distribution. Okay. This is the Kazakov model, and it is well known that in this model there is a new degree of freedom that it emerges, and which is the geometry of space of two-dimensional space-time. What I do is essentially the generalization to let first the coordination number here to be any, so it doesn't have to be planar graphs. Second, I add a Gaussian weight. I choose the couplings with a Gaussian weight instead of from a random distribution.
But I would object to your formulation that there is a new degree of freedom emerging, namely that of space-time. In fact, you could the view of Kazakov was, of course, exactly the opposite, that you started with space-time was defined by Wij.
Yes.
It was there from the beginning, and then you coupled easing spins to this space-time. So there was nothing emerging. It was there defined from the very beginning.
Okay.
And I would just say that
the important thing is that he had fluctuating geometries.
Yes, but he was.
By relaxing the planarity for this and putting a weight, I want to have, on top of fluctuating geometry, I want to have fluctuating topology.
Yeah, sure.
And planarity is exactly what allows you to identify as geometries. So it's not just a small generalization you're making.
No, it is actually a big generalization, as you will
see. Yeah, but before you call it small generalization.
A small generalization in the sense that I just add a Gaussian term. But as I will see, and as we were discussing yesterday, this Gaussian term seems to have a lot of consequences.
No, but you're not just adding a Gaussian term. You're also removing the implicit constraint in the Kazakov model that you have planar graphs.
Absolutely.
And that is what allows you to identify the two-dimensional.
Two things. I remove the constraint of planarity and I add a Gaussian weight.
Yes, sir.
So quantum mechanics is, yes?
Sorry, we asked a lot of questions here. Your new Gaussian term is not what I would expect. What I would expect is that you would have added a sum over triangles and multiply three W's together and have a kind of Plaquette model with gauges variance. And I'm just wondering if you have some words about why you're not doing that.
Because I want to avoid quantizing space, imposing a certain quantization of space. I want to let it self-organize. So I want to avoid triangles.
So,
the number of triangles will be an output, not an input.
Okay.
There will be few triangles, there will be few squares, and in certain cases there will be lots of pentagrams.
I see. Okay. So
as in the Kazakov model, the Hamiltonian in the exponent of the partition function defines a probability distribution on graphs. And I'm interested here in the semi-classical limit, mainly. I want to see if there are quantum phase transitions as a function of the coupling, and to see what are the possible ground state. So this is the idea. So how do I go about to do that? To study the ground states of this Hamiltonian, which is the semi-classical quantized spacetimes emerging here, I will reverse a trick which is used in neural networks by positing this time evolution. So I will posit the evolution. Now this is fictitious time, huh? This is not real time. It's just an evolution which helps to find a ground state. That the spin at times fictitious time t plus 1 is the sign of the magnetization, and that the new couplings at times t plus 1 are also a function of the magnetization, but since they take the value 0 and 1, I have here the theta function, heaviside function, instead of the sine function. And this is the magnetization for this evolution. So one can show, if you go through this, that the energy along this fictitious time evolution cannot increase. Okay? So when I let this evolve, I go down in energy. So when I have reached a fixed point here, I have essentially the ground state.
Carlo, are you imagining ascending n to infinity at some time, or you just have
no, n is finite. N is finite for the moment. Then I'll try to see how things depend on n. N is finite mainly because you cannot do this with very big n's on a computer. Frustration creates lots of false minima, and it's very hard to actually find the correct
one. Yeah, but where this dynamics of yours goes, of course, that might be quite sensitive to n.
Sorry, I didn't hear
you. Where you analyze the dynamics by this evolution.
Yes.
Right, that could start looking quite different when n becomes very large.
It is correct. You have to study how. You have to run this thing for many n's, many times, to see how things depend on n. This will be actually the main subject of the talk is exactly how things depend on n. So let me do a small excursus on graphs. Some notation and jargon. So n is the number of vertices. K is the degree, which is the number of connection at vertex I, ki. The clustering coefficient of a graph, it's defined as three times the number of triangles divided by the connected triples. So essentially, the clustering coefficient is the number of triangles. And by D, big D, I will denote the average distance on the graph. So there are essentially two big classes of graphs which have been studied, the original random graphs introduced by Erdős and Rényi. In random graphs, connections between vertices are chosen completely randomly. The degree distribution that comes out is Poisson. And the clustering coefficient is an inverse function of n, so low clustering. These are called small worlds. It's the famous 6 degrees of separation. The average distance goes like the log of the number of vertices. A generalization is called generalized random graphs. In generalized random graph, the connections are random, but so that the degree distribution is predetermined. So you choose the degree distribution that you want, and you put that as a constraint on a random choice. The clustering coefficient is given in terms of the first and second moment of the degree distribution, but it's still low clustering, and they are all also small worlds. So logarithmic.
Can you explain what a triangle is in this context and a triple?
The difference between triangles and triples?
Yeah. Well,
triangles are closed, triples don't need to be closed.
Okay, but triangle is not used in the sense of a spatial triangle, it just means I have three points. 3 points of the graph.
Right, 3 points of the triangle. So a closed triangle is like this. A triple can be like this. 3 points, but it need not to be closed.
But it doesn't suggest the presence of space or anything.
No.
Just the word presence.
Just only combinatorics. Really 3 points. So here I have a new type of graph, which I call dynamical graph, just to give a name, which are defined as a global minima of that Hamiltonian that I introduced. So I can proceed a little bit by analytical computation. First of all, one can show that a K-regular graph is a graph in which at every vertex it has the same connectivity. A K-regular graph, which has all space-time points aligned, is a local minimum of the Hamiltonian if the degree lies between 1 of 2j and 1 plus 1 over 2j. So if you define j to be 1 over 4d minus 1, just a redefinition of the coupling constant, then you get the result that for every integer d, a 2d regular graph is a local minimum of h and has the lowest possible energy among all regular graphs. So if we admit make an assumption that the minimum will be regular, which you can show numerically it is so. So you get it, you get the minimum for a 2D regular graph when the coupling constant is g, 1 over 4 times an integer minus 1. So here, for example, you have for d is equal to, connectivity is everywhere 4. So I will call just a name, this coupling constant here, the bare dimension of spine, just because, for example, for 4, you have essentially a graph with a planar graph, like in the Kazakov model.
Sorry, does it mean that, but there could be a global minimum, right? It's irregular,
So in the class of regular graph, it's not. That one can show.
But then there are
it could be that there is a local minimum which is not regular. This you cannot show analytically. True.
So the configuration space on which one this is now discussing is a set of all graphs.
All graphs.
With a fixed number of vertices.
With a fixed number of vertices. So how do I go about measuring the properties of this semi-classical universe graphs? Is I start from a random configuration. I allow the graph to self-organize according to this evolution law until I find a fixed point, which corresponds to a connected 2D regular graph. By the way, when you reach fixed point, it is always 2D regular. So I haven't found any case in which the energy was lower for a non-regular graph. But I cannot exclude. And then I have, as output, I have the adiation symmetrices, Vig, of the graph. And I can measure, for example, from the adiation symmetrices, I can measure clustering coefficients and various properties. So I take averages over different runs. And in every average, the details vary, but the bulk properties converge. Unfortunately, I was able only to reach 250 vertices. Mainly because I always end up in higher lying non-local minima, so it's a little bit painful. There is the frustration causes a complex landscape, and it is not easy always to reach the minimum.
Have you any idea how the number of links grow with n?
Sorry?
Have you any idea how the number of links grow with n?
Yes.
How do they grow?
It's d times n, because it's the summation formula.
It's proportional to n.
It's proportional to n. Yes. Actually, it's the coupling constant d, the dimension of space times n. The bare dimension, what I call the bare. So here is what I found for the clustering coefficient. So the clustering coefficient is, again, a finite size effect. It's proportional 1 over n. So here I have plotted it for the integers d. So this is these dynamical graphs. And this I have plotted what you would get for the generalized random graph with the same degree distribution. So you see, it's just a little bit higher, but comparable. Here you get the standard deviation over the various runs. Spectral dimensions, I have measured the spectral dimension by letting particles diffuse on the graph. Okay, so the spectral dimension measures the connectivity of the graph. Essentially, it's defined by a return probability of a random walk after t steps. So if you have the probability of return after t steps, it scales like minus d spectral over 2. Of course, for infinite graphs, this relation holds in the limit t equals infinity. If you have a finite graph, it's a little bit more difficult. You have to let the random go around enough, but not too much that this is the finite size effect. Here is what I get for integer d, the spectral dimension. So you see that the spectral dimension is indeed the same as the bare dimension. So here comes the interesting part. You observe quite easily a first quantum phase transition when the coupling constant d is equal 1. There is no way to get connected homogeneous universes graphs with all orientation of space-time when d is small or equal 1. This is actually quite easy to see also from an analytical point of view. D is equal 1 is the lower critical dimension of the Ising model. So when the connectivity of the graph reaches d is equal 1, the ferromagnetic part of the Ising model, the ferromagnetic Ising model becomes critical and it just disorders. So when d is equal 1, space-time is disordered. So there is no alignment of space-time space.
Yes, sir. I didn't understand whether you now chose the d to enter the coupling constant.
D is the coupling constant of the model.
That's right. So yes. The j was this specific
j is just
of d.
It's just d. I just substituted it with d.
But you didn't do anything to the degree. I mean,
no, d is the degree of the graph is the coupling constant. This is what comes out.
But you didn't put it by hand.
Nothing. In the minimum,
okay.
In the ground state, the minimum, the connectivity of the ground state reflects the coupling constant. It's related to the coupling constant. Okay? So in this sense, the connectivity is the coupling constant.
But you dynamically generate the set of ground state, or you just assume there are certain class and
no.
Then look at that class?
No. I dynamically generate, and this is what I observe.
By this evolution.
Yes.
I have a question on this. Each given run of the evolution is going to stop at some local minimum. Do you just keep trying new starting points until you get?
Yes, I do a lot of starting points. I did many, many, many runs to see if I always get to the same point. Of course. So here comes the most interesting part. I measured the intrinsic Hausdorff dimension. So the intrinsic Hausdorff dimension is measured by, so it measures the scaling of the average distance d on the graph with n, with the number of vertices. So this is the definition, 1 over dh. So it looks, this is numerics, of course. It looks like there is a second quantum phase transition at d is equal 4. Whenever d is bigger than 4, like for example here, I didn't put the rest here, but it goes up like this. The Hausdorff dimension corresponds to the spectral dimension and to the Baer dimension. So you see 5 is the Baer dimension, the spectral dimension is also 5, and the Hausdorff dimension is 5, and it goes on for 6 and 7 and whatever. But as soon as you hit 4, there is no way of going down with the Hausdorff dimension. It seems to remain 4. 4 means, okay, so 4 in this sense. This is what I got numerically. So it seems that when d is between 1 and 4, the spectral dimension is lower than the Hausdorff dimension, which is always 4. So it seems that you have a second quantum phase transition, and d is equal 4. And note that d is equal 4 is something you remembering that d is the dimension of the graph. It's the connectivity of the graph. D is equal 4 is actually what you want if you want to generate a four-dimensional quantized space-time. And in this scenario, this dimension of space-time, quantized space-time, would be related to the fact that d is equal 4 is the upper critical dimension of the Ising model.
What's the lower line? Sigma sub h.
Sigma is the standard deviation that I got from the runs.
So question. Is
yes.
Why do you call it quantum? Just because you're doing it at zero temperature? There's no quantum in the normal sense of the word.
Yes, I call it quantum because it's a zero temperature. Yes. But actually, you can show that. It is quantum in the sense it's a typical quantum phase transition situation where you have two Hamiltonians that commute, which is each other, but you have ground state. So you have the levels that make level crossings, but the wave function remain the same. It's actually a typical situation of a quantum phase transition.
I mean, you could embed this in a quantum model, but there's nothing specifically quantum about it. It's all classical variables. If you have everything commuting, then it's the same as being classical.
Again, this is, if you have a ground state, okay, if you have qubits or bits, it's actually the same. You can measure the ground state. If the ground state at a certain level of the coupling constant make level crossing, but the corresponding ground state wave function remains the same, then you have a quantum phase condition.
Well,
even if you don't have actual quantum degrees or quantum operators in that.
It's just the terminology, I suppose. But there's a difference between something like the Heisenberg model, where you actually are using the whole Hilbert space, and
yes,
the Heisenberg model.
Of course. But that's another case of quantum phase transition, because there you have operators that don't commute.
Okay. Terminus language.
If one adopted a geometric point of view, of course, these dimensions are very, very rough characterizations of geometry. We have to think about it this way. I'm not finished with the question. So do you have any indication that your special graphs resemble nice, I don't know, hypercubic lattices?
Yes and no. Yes. I will show something about the geometry afterwards. Okay. But at this point, I would say that this is more topology than geometry.
Well, of course, I mean, when you start measuring dimensions of
Renate,
course,
I will show
scales.
I will show you that you can actually define the Ricci curvature on graphs. And I will show you that.
But for instance, these objects, do they have a diameter? Can you associate?
Yeah, the diameter is essentially the same as the average distance. It scales in the same way. It's the 1 over d.
It's the total volume.
Yes.
It's a global Hausdorff symmetry.
It's the Hausdorff symmetry. Sure.
I have to ask you, but it seems to me that this is some very similar to quantum gravity. Isn't this exactly the same?
This is what I called quantum gravity, the same.
Quantum gravity.
It is very similar.
Right? It is
very
similar. Is it more general? Or
no, it is simpler.
The difference is what I pointed out, that they would close the link term and have plaquettes and triangles and therefore prefer them. What he's doing is very similar to quantum gravity.
Very similar.
But you've simplified it greatly. They have a very complicated Lagrangian.
Yes.
Which
it's actually a simplified version.
And also, originally you guys were maybe about space only.
Yes.
This is only space too.
And you want to have that in space time.
Sorry?
This is a model for space time?
Yes.
And quantum gravity was only
Euclidean.
About space. As a kind of philosophical difference. Yeah.
But the main thing is that it was mostly not me, but Alex had some connection to it. Mostly in quantum gravity, the game was to invent a Hamiltonian which you could choose to set up this frustration kind of by hand so that you would get submanifolds of a given dimension to come out. What you've done is much more interesting because you've taken the simplest possible thing, which is just two guys in a row, not necessarily closing.
Yes, and it seems that the frustration in that is enough to open the graph and have this half stuff on it.
I mean, simplicity lies a little bit in the eyes of the holder. Why choose? And there's no, I mean, you argued in terms of simplicity, but there's no claim that this is unique in any way.
I don't have that claim. I, to be honest, as I was discussing with Jan yesterday, I started from the Kazakov model and I tried to generalize that in a way that would give more physics of it, especially relaxing the planarity. So I will try now to give you some intuition of what happens at d is equal 4. So there is very recent results on the Ising model by the group of Professor Kenna in Coventry, which goes like this. So in the traditional result, a traditional way of thinking about the Ising model is in finite size scaling in the Ising model, is to say that the correlation length xi is always proportional to the physical length L, and that hyperscaling fails above the critical, above the upper critical dimension. So what this group showed is that this result is actually wrong, and that hyperscale is fully restored, but there is an incommensurability between the physical lengths and the correlation lengths at the upper critical dimension. So you have to define actually the correlation lengths to be proportional to the lengths only below the upper critical dimension, but above the upper critical dimension, the correct way of defining the correlation length is L to the power D over DUC, where D is the dimension. An alternative formulation of the same thing is to actually define an effective volume, which is a correlation to the power upper critical dimension, and to say that this is always the volume occupied dynamically by the spins. If you do that, you get that the physical dimension scales as the volume to the power 1 over d for d bigger than 4, already for the Kriesing model. And the physical dimension scales like the effective volume to the power 1 over 4 below the critical dimension. So this is exactly what I measure, identical. So this is a first intuition. A second intuition comes here.
Sorry, is this result for a rectangular lattice in any dimension?
This is a rectangle, yes, as far as I recollect. The Kenner results, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, I think it's rectangle. Let me check before I give you that. So here is a second trial to give you some intuition. So you have an antiferromagnet. If you go through a toy version of this, essentially you have an antiferromagnet for the edges coupled to an external magnetic field, which is produced by space-time. Now, this is the phase structure of an easing antiferromagnet as a function of temperature and applied external field. This is the region in which you have antiferromagnetic order. And here, essentially, you have ferromagnetic order when the field is strong enough. And here, the temperature, as usual, disorders the antiferromagnet. However, here we have a unique coupling constant. So both temperature and the magnetic field are a function of D. So when you vary D, you essentially have a curve through here, like this, that passes directly from an antiferromagnet to a ferromagnet at the critical point, which is seems to be d is equal 4. But now you have to remember that this is an easing model for edges, not for vertices. So the usual way of doing staggered antiferromagnet, so dividing the lattice up in half a lattice in which you points up and half a lattice which points down, you cannot do because these are edges. You can do something else if you assume that the lattice, just as a toy model, that the graph on which you are is bipartite. Then there is a theorem by Koenig that the coloring is 4. And then at each vertex, you can actually choose half of the edges to be plus signs and half of the edges to be minus signs. But then it's a local choice. So for example, here, these two are pluses, and these two are minuses. Here, these two are minuses, and these two are plus. So antiferromagnetic order for edges is something like that. At every point in space, only two of the edges are present. Now you have to imagine, contrary to what I have designed here, because I didn't know how to do it, that this subgraph passes through every point. At every point, you have to do this choice. So what you get is something that essentially has a spectral dimension lower, because this is where a diffusion would go. But it covers the whole original graph. So this is an intuitive way to see why, when you have antiferromagnetic order for edges, you have actually a spectral dimension which is lower than the Hausdorff dimension. When you go at d is equal 4 to a ferromagnetic order, every edge becomes a plus and is present. And then you have that the spectral dimension equals to the Hausdorff. So this is the realization of asymptotic safety I'm after. Let's say that numerics points to is that you have an infrared point at large scales, which is d is equal 4. You have an ultraviolet fixed point at small scales, which is d is equal 1. When you go from large scales down to smaller scales, first the spectral dimensions decouple from the Hausdorff dimension and becomes lower. And this is where you got what exactly you guys have seen in dynamical triangulations. But it doesn't stop at any point. it goes down all the way to one, where space-time itself dissolves into information bits at the end ultraviolet. So start going down in dimension, then holes form in space-time till you have just a soup of bits.
But so your spectral dimension.
Sorry.
Your spectral dimension is always smaller than four.
It is always lower than small in this regime. Okay. Yes, and it is smaller and smaller till when you hit d is equal one, then you have the other Ising model that disorders. So you don't have space time anymore. The spins defining space time start to disorder. So these are the holes here till you don't have anything anymore. So you don't have here any space time interpretation. Okay, so now let's go to finite temperatures. You can solve the model in finite temperatures exactly in mean field theory. At finite temperature, I do exactly the same again as you do in neural networks. You promote the dynamics to a probabilistic version, which is called here, F is the Fermi function. You go through the machinery to show that the equilibrium distribution is just the Boltzmann distribution. And then you can compute expectation values. I will compute the usual expectation value at finite temperature, the mean magnetization for spacetime, and the mean degree. The mean degree is defined as the sum at each vertex over all present connections. So when you do field theory, mean field theory, you get a first equation, which is probably recognized by everybody. This is the standard mean field equation for the ferromagnetic Ising model. Here, normally, you have a thing which is called Z, which is the coordination number. Now, the coordination number, K, in my language, is dynamical. And there is a corresponding equation for it, which depends on S, F being the Fermi function. So this is easy to study. At high temperature, when beta K is smaller than 1, this has no solution, so the mean space-time magnetization is 0. And correspondingly here, the mean degree reaches its maximum, which is essentially n minus 1 half. So it means that in this phase, high temperature, when all space-time points are disordered, the connections, if you want, are maximum. So you're close to the maximal graph, to the complete graph. If you go at lower temperatures, I hit the wrong button. You know how to fix this? Okay, sorry. Okay, if you go at lower temperatures, when beta k is bigger than 1, then you have a solution here that tends to 1. So this is a, I call it the topology phase, because you have space-time now. Vertices are aligned. And here, now the mean degree of the graph comes down from a very high value to its minimum degree of the ground state at beta is equal infinity, which, as we have seen, is 2D. So what happens is that in between, there is a phase transition from this information phase, let's call it, to a topology phase. And this, for d is equal 4, happens at this value, so at 0.468n. At this point, you have, at this transition point, you have that the mean degree is of order n, and the mean distance is of order 1 in the graph. I call it Big Bang, but take it cum grano salis. It would be a ferromagnetic transition. You see, this universe graph will start out as an almost complete graph. Every point would be connected to every other point. And then when the temperature is lowered, let me just finish the sentence. When the temperature is lowered, it does not expand in the usual sense, but it unfolds. So the connectivity is diminished. To give you an idea, something has happened you don't see. So this was a cube. So in a normal case, for example, you start from a cube, you inflate. This is the normal way to expand. Here, essentially, you go down from three dimension to two, so you open it up. So it's a sort of unfolding that takes place.
Just to clarify what you mean with temperature.
Yes.
Is it in the original Hamiltonian you had?
Yes.
Is it basically exponential minus beta Hamiltonian,
yes,
which gives you the rate?
Yes. Okay. It's possible. Yes.
And so the first discussion you had was for beta equal.
The discussion we had first was for beta is equal zero, in which you had only the ground states that mattered.
Okay,
here you have
okay.
Now here you have other graphs that
okay.
contribute to this story, okay. And this is why you go down from essentially a complete graph, you go down to a four-dimensional graph at temperature zero. This is what I call topological expansion. So it's unfolding instead of expanding.
Yeah, but here it's a four-dimensional space-time, not spaces.
No, this is Euclidean four-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an interesting point here, which I still don't understand quite well. And I would love, actually, to discuss with anybody that is interested. If you think a little bit, it seems to me that in topological expansion, there is actually a preferred dimension that emerges. But it's a bit complicated. I'm happy to discuss that with anybody interested after the talk.
Isn't the diameter increasing when you have this topological expansion?
Yes.
So in that sense, it's a geometric expansion too.
If you want. Actually, it's very interesting to see how it expands. And this is my next slide.
So the Fermat state, was that the highly connected one, or was it the not highly connected one?
That's the
Fermat state.
Yes.
Was it highly connected or not?
At the transition,
yeah,
the easing model for the space-time points aligns. So you have space-time forms. And at that point, the graph is extremely connected.
Yeah. But then when you are in the ferromagnetic state where the spin points in the same direction, is it connected or not?
Yes, very connected
very
at
connected.
The transition.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when you lower the temperature, it slowly disconnects.
Yeah.
I think he's asking away from the transition. If you're deep into the...
Yeah. If you deep into the ferromagnetic phase,
yes.
Then it's highly connected.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I guess that I just proven analytically here, so that I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because then you can solve the model, your model exactly.
Well, I would love to see that.
Well, we can discuss it afterwards. Yeah. But that gives exactly this result. Yeah.
So to answer your question, here is how the average distance scales with the temperature. And it's exponential. So near temperature infinity or the transition, you are close to the minimum here, which is order 1. And it scales like 1 over t. And when you're close to 0, you're near to the maximum. And it scales like a to the t, where a is a function of the coupling constant. So I don't know. This is, again, it's more a provoking statement than any other things. But think you start at the transition with something which is completely connected. Every point is connected to the other. And then you have something that scales down exponentially with the temperature. A small decrease in the temperature, you have a huge expansion immediately, topological. So the distances scale exponentially. You have also black holes. So in this sense, huh? Let me call them topological black holes. So as I mentioned before, when you try to reach the minimum, there are lots of configurations which are local minimum. And that hurts when you do the numerical simulation. But if you think, if you go look what they are very interesting. So let me start from the usual easing model. In the usual easing model, when you have situations like this, that you have an island of wrong spins among, let's say, plus spins, in higher dimensions, you have the concept of pile droplets. You cannot turn around any single spin, because turning around a single spin would actually increase the energy. So what Piles showed is that the relevant degrees of freedom is the boundary of the droplet. Okay? So when it is entropically favorable to turn around, then it is the whole island that turns around, simultaneously lowering the energy. Now, here, the situation is a little bit different, because also the links are dynamic. So when you have such a droplet, it is actually energetically favorable to simply let this be, but sever the links. So what you do, what you have by severing the links, you have a configuration in which, let me call it space-time, please allow me to do that, ends here on a Schwarzschild-type radius, and you have inside a hole in which there is no space-time. This is energetically favorable. And the instability is towards creating links along the boundary. But you can show analytically that these configurations are stable down to very, very low temperature, down to temperature where the connectivity is almost the minimal connectivity. So I've called this topological black holes. Now, I'd like to present something which is a little bit preliminary, so bear with me. It's quite new, but it's quite interesting, so I wanted to present it. So I'm trying to make the next step to really to the geometry. So we all know that for general relativity, the Ricci curvature on the Riemann manifolds is important. And now it turns out these are very recent mathematical developments. There is a way of defining Ricci curvature on graphs. And this is due to a mathematician, a French mathematician called Olivier. And it's called Olivier curvature. In a certain sense, it's the coarse version of the Ricci curvature. And it's quite a difficult beast to work on. It's purely combinatoric based on the Wasserstein distance on the graphs. So what I've tried to do is to characterize graphs by the correlations between the Olivier curvatures at various vertices on the graphs. Now, in statistics, there is a certain things which a thing called the effective degrees of freedom when you have random variables, which is n divided by this expression in terms of the correlations between the various random variables. And this can be reformulated as 1 plus the expectation value of the variance divided by the variance of the expectation value. This thing can be measured again with the same method once you have the adiation symmetries. So you see, if you have short-range correlations between Ricci curvatures, Olivier curvatures at different vertices, the degrees of freedom in these Olivier curvatures is the same as n. If you have power laws, then you have here a scaling exponent, which is less than 1. When the correlation becomes constant, it's the other extremum, then you have a single degree of freedom. I've managed to do runs for d is equal 4 and 3, and this is what you get. So in d equal 4, the number of degrees of freedom is essentially the same as n, so it means that there are no correlations. As soon as you go to 3, you get a number which looks very much like 3/4. Unfortunately, I haven't had time yet to present to actually obtain results for n is equal to 2. But again, you see that this is geometry. This is really geometry. So you see, again, very, very different behavior, d is equal 4 and d is equal 3 already. Now, let me conclude with this statement. The correlations here, in this limit of very high correlations, essentially, between points of the graphs, you have no variance. All have the same Olivier curvature, but the Olivier curvature of the whole is a random variable. So if you run the system 2 or 3 times, many times, you always get different curvatures. In the opposite case, in which n is this, you have variations along the graph between one vertex as the other. But every time you run the systems for large n, you get the same curvature. Okay? So I'd like to say that having no correlation and having this second situation, it's actually the best simulation of constant curvature on these quantized graphs.
So isn't that just a statement about statistics? Or just, because the variance and the mean, I mean, Poissonian means the variance equal the mean.
Yes, this is the statistics. This is self-organization, so you run many times, as it was proposed, and you have to see what spaces come out. Okay? What I'm telling you is that the curvature, this combinatorial curvature that comes out for large n, is always the same.
But is your curvature a local thing? Is there a curvature at each vertex, or a curvature? Are you averaging it over the?
It is local.
Are you saying every vertex will have the same curvature?
No. What I'm saying is that there can be fluctuations from one vertex to the other. But if you now rerun the same graph many times, starting if you self-organize the same graph many, many times, the average will always be the same.
The mean curvature. Well,
the mean curvature between these factors. Okay. In the opposite case here, you have the opposite case in which you have no variation over the vertices, but every time you run the graph, you self-organize the graph, you obtain something completely different. These are the two extremes.
This curvature has to do with the coordinate. Some function of the local coordination.
It has to do with, say, the Wasserstein distance is essentially what it does. It's like taking derivatives on the graph. So taking derivatives on the graph.
Like finite.
Yes. Yes.
Suppose that the curvature is constant everywhere on the graph. Does that mean it's an approximation to a sphere or something? I mean, what does that mean geometrically?
It's a constant curvature.
This is completely preliminary. I'd like to discuss this. I don't really know what it means.
Well, I mean, the people who were.
These graphs should be renormalized also to see how they flow. Okay, but this is what one really has to do.
But suppose you take a triangulation.
Yes.
And you define the Ricci curvature of that. Is it related to this?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I mean, initially also, I mean, what really puzzled me at the beginning, you said that the connectivity follows a Poissonian statistics.
Only in random graphs, nothing to do with this.
But this was your initial model, right? And then
I explained to myself. When I say that, that was just an excursus on graphs to say what are the typical models. Here it is not Poisson. Here it is always D, fixed connectivity over all graphs. This is the main difference of these graphs to random graphs. So let me conclude with the prediction that seems to come out. Of course, much work has to be done to confirm this, but numerics is pointing to this. The dimension of this quantized universe is 4, and there is no space-time at small scale, only information bits. That the formation of this quantized space-time is a ferromagnetic transition with no singularity, and then afterwards you have this topological expansion. So future directions, enormous amount of work to do, but as I was saying, the first thing is you have to renormalize these graphs, and there is a developed way to renormalize the graphs. Okay, there are many papers already written how to renormalize graph. And in fact, it's very interesting. Some graphs are self-similar, some are not. It's very interesting to see if this can be done. And what you have to do here is to see if you can actually now make contact with the emergence of geometry and general relativity at this infrared fixed point. Time, I said I have the impression topological expansion is related to a preferred dimension, but I don't know. I don't know yet. I'd like to discuss this with anybody interested. Something very interesting. At finite temperature, if you are a little bit above zero, the dimensions are a little bit above 4. And it seems here that the Olivier-Ricci curvature is negative. And you get something which is in the graph community is called hyperbolic graphs. Now, if you get, for example, if you are in 5 dimensions here, do you have a discrete version? So, 5 dimension with hyperbolic geometry is what is typically typical of the ADS conformal field theory correspondence. The question is there a discrete version of this? And the second question is, if epsilon is not 1, so 4.2, so you're fractal, above 4, is the reversion of ADS CFT with fractal dimensions. But these are all speculations for the future. And here I'd like to conclude.
D, I understand, I can just vary continuously if I want to.
Yes.
So what happens if D is 4.01 or 3.2?
Yes, then things become more difficult, but you can do the same computation. You don't have adiation symmetries which are all everywhere corresponding to the same connectivity. For example, if you are between 3 and 4, you have a percentage of a percentage of the vertices we will have 4 neighbors or 8 neighbors, and a percentage which will have only 6. But in principle, you can do all computation again.
But you're not going to do them for a range of D simultaneously. I'm just saying it because initially you complained about like CDT that one puts in a dimension. So you're doing the same in a manner.
No, I'm not putting a dimension.
But you put in a number that's called D into your coupling.
Yes, but the idea is that D is driven to 4 automatically in the inference. This is the idea.
Yeah, but that's the same thing that we find. We put in something that's a dimension of the building block, but in the course of constructing the model and taking limits, this becomes a dynamical quantity.
Well, then I apologize for having misunderstood that. Your work, but if you find the same thing, then it's even better.
Well, it's a similar effect, I would say.
Yes.
So your transition between the phases was by tuning the temperature?
You mean now?
As a big bang,
yes. If you tune the temperature, if you let the temperature lower, you have this phase transition.
There's always this question: who is tuning the
absolutely. This is
it's a
question that has to
be actually gives you the entire, yes.
But the same you have in the standard cosmology.
There's this difference to quantum graffiti where indeed, that was about graphs in space.
But there's still with
and then you could see the coupling for some reason changes in time and drives the transition to kind of inflation or big bang.
Well, they're worried about the analogous issue, which is to model the Big Bang. They started with very high temperature.
Yeah.
It had a complete graph. They lowered the temperature. There was a phase transition where the complete graph unfolded and became, say, three-dimensional because the model of space.
Yeah.
And
but in this
they were left having to ask why in as a function of some externally imposed time, did the temperature decrease in time? And they just put that in by hand. Whereas had they been able to do something a little bit more sophisticated, complete, they would have just had the universe driving dynamically to expand and lower the temperature. But I had, there was another question.
No,
sorry,
but just to.
So here it's different that time is already included because it's full space time, so it's a bit unclear.
I don't claim to have a full cosmology here. I just wanted to see
how beta should change. I mean, whether it's a space time dependent beta or something. That is the.
It's all questions that have to be answered. But you're right. The temperature, I just calculated the phase transition that you have these two phases, that the connectivity goes down.
At this phase transition.
In temperature.
In temperature.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the specific heat related to the other?
I guess I could, but I haven't done it.
Okay, because if the specific heat grows or shrinks like the power of the volume, then you can make arguments about how the fluctuations scale. with temperature and with time, we go through the transition. And there's an argument, I don't remember the details, but we looked at it with Jean Frejo and Carlo Pentaldi, that if the specific heat scales with essentially the area, so like the two-thirds power of the spatial volume, then the fluctuations at the phase transition are scale invariant. One could hypothesize that that's responsible for the scale invariant fluctuation in the CMV.
I think you could probably compute this. But
so we've just talked about it.
Okay. I think
is that possible that in your model that any two point on the graph is has the possibility to be connected, a positive omega ij at the next step? And is that in some thing non-local happening in the space?
You mean when you have temperature?
Yeah.
When you have temperature and the temperature goes down,
mm-hmm.
it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. They disconnect.
Are you talking about that artificial dynamics that you use?
You're talking about the artificial dynamics.
No. Just physically, hold your system. Is this your question? Hold your system at finite temperature.
Step.
Okay.
It's fluctuating.
Yes.
Do those fluctuations include the possibility of turning on a W for any I and J?
Sure.
Yes.
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 So. If you're below the phase transition but still at a finite temperature, so you're unrolled.
Yes.
So your average distance is far.
Yes.
There's still a possibility of a fluctuation which makes any two nodes connected directly, even if.
In principle, yes. There is still the possibility that the disconnected points fluctuate and connect.
So this is a phenomenon that some people call disordered locality.
Sorry, it's a phenomenon?
Called disordered locality.
Uh-huh.
Locality, the concept of locality can become disordered by a thermal fluctuation.
Yeah, I guess at finite temperature, I cannot avoid that. I mean, as I see it now. Because I can compute only averages in mean field.
Yes, so
averages
again,
means that, you know, when you are between two integers, essentially the majority starts to disconnect. But you cannot say for sure that there is not one that can jump up and then re-jump down.
So there was something similar in quantum gravity. And they speculated that this could solve the horizon problem. This would explain why far away regions of the universe get thermalized.
You have to explain to me that.
So I'm not clear on how you intend to get back time as in space time. Is it by?
I'm not clear myself. Okay. I have to admit that. You know, time is the
have
biggest.
Is this intended as some sort of analytic continuation analogous to a whip rotation?
Okay.
In the case of CDTs, there's a clear notion of the analytic.
Well, in the case of CDT, they have a nice, correct me if I'm wrong again, you have a nice concept of time from the beginning.
In the case of causal sets, time is always there. It's fundamentally Lorentzian.
Absolutely.
In this case, I'm not sure.
Okay, the only thing that I can say is that connected to the problem of temperature, I have the impression that if you do topological expansion, you can actually define a preferred dimension, one of the mean. Okay? Because if you think of topological dimension, imagine for a moment, even if there is no embedding space, imagine to embed and align this space. And what topological dimension, topological expansion is. What you would get is essentially you an accordion and you open the accordion, right? And the thing unfolds.
As you lower the temperature.
As you lower the temperature, yes. So a point on the bellows of the accordion experiences a flow. Okay. Originally, I thought this may have something to do with time.
But this would be an external time. I thought you.
No, it would be a time like, which is completely related to temperature.
Right. So that's another dimension, so to speak. It's not in your graph.
Correct.
No, it's not a dimension.
It's a consequence
there
of the.
There seems to be a lot of people are feeling. There's a lot of. It's almost as if you're really dealing just with space and not with time. a lot of your sort of metaphors or, you know,
yes,
interpretive
I was hoping,
comments were more
yes.
like as if you were dealing with space than if you were just dealing with space-time.
But I absolutely admit that time is not something which I've been able to get out in a convincing way. Actually, not at all.
Where should anisotropy arise, kind of from the internal ingredients you used here, right?
Excuse me?
How should an anisotropy arise? Because
the only way is during this unfolding. There you have this anisotropy. Okay. There you can define one preferred image.
But if you stop
the one that opens up, look.
And if you stop the unfolding at a fixed value of the temperature, would you be able to recognize the special direction? Or do you need to go through a whole sequence of different
if I stop the unfolding, if I stop the unfolding at a certain time, but I know that that a certain time, a certain moment.
A certain temperature.
Temperature, whatever. And I know that there were higher and slower temperature. I know that it's part of a thing. Then I still can define this preferred image.
So the graph itself is the graph itself in some sense anisotropic, I guess. Sounds like you're saying yes.
I don't want to say yes, but there are
but
things that are pointing that.
If you don't say yes, how do you know
what
just the fact that you know that there were higher and lower temperatures won't point out which direction
yes.
was the one.
Yes. So you're coming back that you need the temperature, the external temperature, to actually get this out.
But you're tied to four-dimensional prediction that your spaces, your geometries which you generate are four-dimensional because that's the upper critical dimension of your model. So
that looks like the point where it flows, yes?
Right. So if you were to, Rafael is suggesting that you change the way of talking about your model and imagine that there is an external time. I don't know if you're suggesting that, but you might be suggesting that.
I'm suggesting that it looks like that's...
But then you would be predicting the dimension of space.
Yeah, the question, that's the follow-up question. Can you do anything with three dimensions?
This would point to the fact that there is no that the dimensions are really four.
Really?
The only thing I would then
well,
you know, four, five dimension is the preferred dimensionality by the string theorist.
What?
Five dimension is the preferred dimensionality of the string theorist because you have the ADS CFT correspondence in five dimensions.
But it's only 10 dimensions.
No, it's five. It's five.
Yeah, but can I just make a comment?
Yes.
Because you're saying then that, I mean, you have a four-dimensional space, but if you include this external time external temperature parameter, you're saying there is some kind of linking between this temperature parameter and one of the spatial directions.
Yes.
So there is a notion where if you have this external driving parameter, one of your one of the coordinates on the four-dimensional space would be some kind of time parameter.
Say that again. I don't.
So because what he's saying is that you have this 4D space,
yeah,
and there's external temperature, and you drive the temperature on a slider, yeah, and the space expands in this
right.
one direction. So the slider is somehow connected to one of the dimensions of the space.
Well, that was the question. Yeah, is it an that's the question
yeah.
about anisotropy. This is
yeah.
the typical configuration.
So this would define you that. I mean,
but
you
don't seem
slide.
To know exactly what is. The
yeah, I mean that's.
If
it
is indeed
yeah.
anisotropic in a particular sense, that could be a kind of emergent time, although it's still not causality. It's completely out. I mean, still, you would need, I think, to do some sort of Wick rotation or analytic continuation.
Yes.
Or some other
you would
technique
have,
in order to
you would need a reason to do Lorentzian. You would need a reason to do the Lorentzian rotation. Yes.
But if one wants to have such a link, one would have to introduce kind of a vertex dependent coupling constant theta.
Sorry, I hear badly, this is why.
Wouldn't you need to introduce the temperature or beta which depends on the vertex, on the vertices? In this case, there could be linking between the temperature and one of the dimensions.
That could be a way to do it.
But it makes the model much more complicated
yes.
to simulate, of course.
Okay. course, yes. But that could be a way to do it, yes.
I just wanted to make one comment. You kept referring to this being information bits and no other geometric structure. The word information is not to my personal taste, but one could say exactly the same thing about causal sets. There are just bits. The only variables are bits which represent certain kinds of causal connections. And to the extent that any geometry comes out, it's an emergent geometry, or topology of emergence, and so on. The thing that's built in is fundamental, though, is the causal relations. Whereas here you're building in a kind of topological variable as the
I'm trying to get topology out of these fundamental bits.
Yeah, but you're building it in. I mean, in the sense, you're interpreting the bits in a topological way.
Yes.
You're making a graph.
Yes.
Whereas in the causal set, one interprets the bits in a temporal way.
Yes.
But there's no more or less input geometry or dimension in the one case than in the other case.
I agree.
I'd like to get back to this question about Poissonian description for the connectivity. So initially you have Poissonian statistics. Then when D is not exactly 4, you don't have exactly connectivity 4, so you still have fluctuations around that, right?
No, excuse me. I never had Poissonian statistics.
You never have?
Never.
But then, in some sense, when you have like an average connectivity, which I guess the average is...
You mean now finite temperature or zero temperature?
Finite temperature?
A finite temperature, I have just, let's say that the D corresponds, the temperature corresponds to a D which is between 2 and 3, for example. Then I have the connectivity varies, but it varies in the sense I have a percentage of the vertices which have connectivity corresponding to D is equal 2, and the rest corresponding to connectivity D is equal 3. No plus. Just X corresponds to dimension 2, 1 minus X corresponds to dimension
3. That's a mean field description?
That's a mean field description.
But you actually did some, you went beyond mean field in some of the...
Sorry?
Some of your simulations went beyond the mean field. Is that
zero zero temperature
finite
is...
Finite temperature.
Finite temperature is all mean field.
I thought you said you ran some Monte Carlo.
No, finite temperature is all.
It's all mean field.
But your definition of curvature is 1 minus...
minus the Wasserstein distance.
But E isn't either, you had this formula, wasn't that the first, the mean value divided by the variance of a quantity?
For the curvature?
Yeah.
No. I didn't define the curvature. It's too complicated.
The effective number of degrees of freedom.
No, the curvature, if you want, I can define it, but it's quite complicated, the Olivier curvature. It's 1 minus the Wasserstein distance. The Wasserstein distance, you have to start to define probability distributions on the graph, and it's a distance between probability distribution, then you have to essentially displace the probability distribution from one point, from one vertex to the other, and find the infimum of the cost doing this. It's also called the Earth mover distance. The Earth mover distance, because you have a pile of Earth around one vertex, and you have to find the minimum effort to push it to the same type of pile to the next. So in the end, it's a beast which is quite difficult to work in. I found an expression, an analytic expression for regular graphs. It depends on the number of triangles, on the number of squares, and on the number of pentagons. That's it. It finishes at pentagon. So to compute it, you have to go through the graphs and find out for every pair of adjacent vertices, you have to find all pentagrams, all squares and all triangles among their neighborhoods. That's what you have to do. But I'm willing to, afterwards define and explain to you exactly.
So one last question,
so how to link the scale defined by the combinatorials with the scale, length scale we use?
With the length scale? The length scale here was set to 1, okay? In all thing, I said from the very beginning, it was the coupling constant of the space-time easing model, that defines, if you want, the length scale of the links is set to 1. That is, the, call it Planck length, whatever. It's the fundamental
so that's
length.
The smallest
yes.
The length.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, then let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you.